Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, KJZ. Get ready for the NFL Draft with ESPN Radio's coverage on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin Show. Weekdays from 6 to 10 Eastern, bringing you insights from a former number one overall pick in the NFL, Keyshawn Johnson, along with co-hosts Jay Williams and Zubin Mehenti. KJZ is also available as a podcast after each show. Follow KJZ as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with over 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, and you have to understand that we have been waiting for the perfect time to have this guest on, because people always hit us like, yo, when's Shannon coming back? When's Shannon coming back? When's Shannon's going to be back on? And I'm like, once we know for sure that the Knicks are good, it will be time to have Shannon back on. The Knicks rattled off a 9-game winning streak and capped that with a moral victory against the Suns. It was this close, almost got it, did not get it. And that's when it's like, all right, let's go ahead and have Shannon. Come on. Shannon Penn, executive producer of Chanae and Golic, 4 to 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio. And now that I live here, man, you know, I used to clown on y'all about just generally being Knicks fans and all that stuff. But I'm rooting for y'all to be good because I want this Knicks-Nets thing to happen. But more than anything, you guys seem so happy. Like, it's kind of whack that y'all ain't got people at the Garden right now because y'all seem really happy.
It just hits different right now, doesn't it, Bo? You know, like, I know a lot of, you know, we haven't had much to cheer. And I say much, we, meaning a lot of us, haven't had much to cheer within the last year or so. But the Knicks have given us reason to be excited, you know, like there's hope. Like the Knicks right now are our, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's a Star Wars reference. I know you may not get that, but I'll take all the moral victories. I'll chop those up too.
I thought that when you said that we haven't a lot to be happy about, and then you said the last year, I was like, oh, damn, I thought you were talking about the last 20 because you're talking about the Knicks.
Damn, do we really have to go there already?
Duh, because how can you appreciate the present without taking proper stock of the past? It's been a little bumpy. It's been a little rough.
Honestly, like real Knicks fans, like you'll have the crazy ones, you know, who will go out there. But I think the real Knicks fans can put it in perspective and understand that it's been a long, hard last 20 years, with the exception of a year or two there during the Carmelo run. It's been a hard, hard 20 years. So I think right now, most Knicks fans can just at least appreciate that they're a respectable team. You know, like there's no delusions of grandeur of what this team will become or how dangerous they'll be in the playoffs or if they're the quote unquote team that no one wants to face in the playoffs. Just appreciate what the heck is going on, that your team is respectable and they actually look competent.
Yo, competent is the word. Like I say, when they hired Thibodeau, and I always get it mixed up. Is it Thibodeau and Tibbs or Thibodeau and Thibs?
Yes.
Like we got all the rope in the world on how we gonna say that man's name, right? And when he got there, me and Pablo used to go back and forth on High Noon about it, and he was just like, yeah, I just don't see him as a forward-thinking guy on offense. Pablo's always on the future. And I'm like, yo, man, y'all need to be competent. Like, if I'm a Knicks fan, I just want to be competent. And then once we figure out competent, we can go from there. Not only are you competent, but you got a dude. Like, Julius Randle is a dude. You got the resurrection of Derrick Rose. And I think with Thibodeau, I could be wrong about this. Did you ever meet him when he was working with us?
I booked him for an interview one time as a guest, but I didn't meet him in person, no.
All right, so he'd be walking around the office, and he and Stan, you know, he and Stan are buddies, right? Stan Van Gundy. Like, they buddies. And they had the same thing in common, which is, you seem so much happier when you're not coaching a basketball team. Like, why are you walking around here smiling and grinning and everything? I'm like, why do you even go back and coach? You seem so much happier when you are not coaching, right? But he does seem to be, like, a little different. And I heard Derrick Rose say, you know, he's letting guys do a little bit more now. He's still going to run you into the ground. But he seems to figure some stuff out. You guys are having fun. This is what's up.
I'm glad you mentioned Julius Randle, because I think with Tibbs and Randle, it's kind of reflective of both being able to have an honest evaluation of themselves and look at where they all start with Coach Like, he knew he was hard on his players when he was in Chicago, and we all know it didn't work out well in Minnesota. So kudos to him, though, to taking a step back, and he went and reevaluated how he went about things. You know, he started to get more input from young coaches, AAU coaches, to get an idea, a better idea of today's players and how to relate to them. Like, granted, he's still not going to be the quote-unquote player's coach per se, but at least he had a chance to say, hey, I need to evolve from what I used to be in Chicago to where modern players are. And in the same regard with Julius Randle, you know, like, he was a high draft pick, you know, coming out of Kentucky. He had a stint with the Lakers and then, you know, 1 year with the Pelicans. And we came with the Knicks that first year. You know, he wasn't passing. Like, he was just trying to get his because he wanted to prove that he was the guy. But then, you know, after, you know, struggling last year, he had to reevaluate where he was as a player and said, I need to become an all-around player, not just get mine, but I need to get other guys involved. I need to be, you know, a better defensive player. I need to get more rebounds. And now you see where that's led to this season with Randle, where he's averaging, what, 24, 10, and 6. I mean, he has to be right now probably the favorite for most improved player. So with both guys, just, you know, be able to have an honest conversation and evaluation of where you are, what it's going to take to get where you want to be. You know, you get nothing but kudos to those guys, regardless of what happens down the stretch of this season.
All right, so unpopular opinion here, right? And don't get me wrong, I'm going to start this with the phrase, God bless the dead. Now, one of my big problems with that process when they were doing that in Philadelphia was that you can't have dudes out here just playing with no concern for winning whatsoever, right? When everybody knows that losing is the program, that's going to mess some dudes up. I contend Nerlens Noel has never been the same, right? Because he cut his teeth playing in the NBA, literally playing for losers, like a team that was trying to lose. And one offshoot of what the Lakers did those last years of the Kobe era was they weren't really playing to win because it was all built around a dude who could not play when he could play and then did not play that much, right? You know, you hear guys now talk about like what they learned from Kobe that were on those teams and the insight, but the truth is Kobe wasn't around those dudes. When he was not playing at that point in his career, he wasn't just in there hanging out with the kids and just like, you know, having fireside chats with them. As I understand it, that wasn't what the program was. But that also meant that Julius Randle's first 2 years in the league, they were out here playing for nothing. Like, what was the point? Now, granted, I think he got hurt his first year in there, you know, but I think it takes a while to kind of shake off what goes on there. Because then Kobe left and they're still like trying to figure it out and hadn't quite gotten there. Because I think people have forgotten this. That 2014 draft was supposed to be one of the greatest drafts of all time. It clearly hasn't turned out that way. But Julius Randle, like coming into college, for example, we would look at him as like a number one pick in the draft kind of dude, like a perennial all-star kind of dude. Like, he now looks like the dude we thought he might have been in 2013. And I think for him, after you get past all that stuff that you started with, and then after you leave the Lakers, when he went from the Pelicans to the Knicks, like, it wasn't like he was going into like supreme winning situations at first. Now he might be a dude that needs to be the best player on the team, or like needs to be in that place, because now he's doing all the other stuff, right? Like, I ain't worried about getting all these rebounds and playing defense if I'm playing for losers. For what? What am I doing all this hard work for?
Like, there's a different level of buy-in, and that's also credit to Tibbs as well. It's like, you know, in addition to bringing on his guys, you know, the Taj Gibsons and, of course, the Derrick Roses, but he's gotten full buy-in from these other guys, from Julius Randle, from Nerlens Noel, as you mentioned before, who's...
That's right, he does play for them.
Yeah, who's probably had his best season as a pro, as you mentioned, from those years of playing on those losing squads in Philly and Oklahoma City and Dallas and some of the other stops that Nerlens Noel has had. So as a totality, the entire squad seems to, like, they're all in line right now. And as a Knicks fan, that's what you can appreciate. The guys seem to be willing to go the extra mile to be one of the better defensive squads in the league. And you can only appreciate that. Let me ask you, Bo, how much of the credit, too, we talked about Tibbs, we talked about Randle, how much of the credit goes to the front office as well?
Got
and
to.
World Wide West and Leon Rose and those guys.
Got to. They're competent. One thing about, like, people, everybody wants their team to just, like, you know, this isn't going to get us to a championship. Damn near nobody wins a championship, right? What you want from your team is competence. Just be able to show up and have a team that you know we might win tonight. Right? Like, no matter what the night is, no matter who we play, we might win tonight. And we're not hearing about the drama coming out of there that we've normally heard. And it's not like just because they win and we don't hear about the drama. We used to hear about drama when they was winning too, right? So Leon Rose got in there, and Leon Rose was a highly respected dude. The question with Wes kind of was, like, the generation that was really influenced by Wes is they're old now. Like, they're like my age, those dudes. Like, it didn't matter so much with the kids. But Wes is a competent person, right? Like, when you ask Wes to go handle some business, Wes is going to get some business handled. And so, again, that's all you need. And now it's shaping up, right? It's shaping up. I want to check the standings again just to make sure. Shannon, this has to kind of excite you a little bit. The Knicks are the fourth seed, tied for the fourth seed with the Hawks. They are both two games ahead of the sixth seed Celtics, all of which is to say it's shaping up for the possibility of the Knicks winning a first-round playoff series. And then we get the Knicks and the Nets in the second round. And I'm just saying now, I don't care how many people are or are not vaccinated. They got to open the building for that, right? Like, if you tell me that you can get into one of those games, but everybody got to be double vaccinated, I get two of them at one time.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Like, I'm absolutely, for the NBA, the best case scenario is that the last four teams in the East are Brooklyn, New York, Philly, and Milwaukee. Like, that's the best case scenario with, as you aforementioned, Brooklyn, New York matchup in the second round. Like, that's a win for everybody. And of course, the Nets will probably win that series, but it's not going to be easy. And that'll be primetime TV. Like, that'll be appointment television, something that we really haven't had. Like, yeah, it was cool when they were in the bubble last year and all that stuff. But if you get a Nets and a Knicks series with a competent Knicks team, that's primetime viewing right there. And that's must-see TV. That's something that the league very much needs, especially this year when we've had so many marquee players that have missed time due to injury. Heck, the entire MVP race has been flipped on its head because of injuries.
Yeah, except for the fact that even if all these dudes have played all year, the MVP is my man Jokic, period. Hard stop. We pick everybody after that. Like, we go from Jokic and we go there. But let me ask this. Have you started to hate the Nets yet? Like, has it gotten there? Has rivalry built?
No, because the Nets and the Knicks have never been a rival. Like, and that's the thing. And it might seem smug as the Knicks fan, but like, how many times have the Knicks and the Nets actually been good at the same time? I think they met in the playoffs in 93, I believe. But you typically, when the Nets are good in those early 2000s with the Jason Kidd teams, that's when the Knicks were on a decline after the 99 finals run. So the Knicks and Nets have never been rivals. Like, they've never fought for the same space. You know, you had the Darrell Williams and Iso Joe Nets teams, but the Knicks weren't really that good. So the two have never really lined up. So I don't consider the Knicks and the Nets a rival. And for me, originally from Brooklyn, like, it's cool what's happening, and it's a totally different Brooklyn now than it was when I grew up there. But my thing is, I'll sit back and that's great for the borough that you have a team doing this. But that's not going to change my Knicks fandom because I cried too many nights.
You've been doing this too long.
After game 7 of 1994. Like, I can't go back now.
Like, I think it might have been different if they gave y'all an expansion team in Brooklyn, right? But a team that you already had decided you don't give a damn about is then kind of hard to get on board with. But how about this? What if the Nets sweep y'all? Will then the hate start? Like, I feel like I need y'all to start hating them in order to make this thing really crack.
No, because, like, even look at the individuals involved, like with KD and Kyrie, like, they don't look at, for that to happen, you're going to need other stars on the other side, you know? Like, you're going to need some players on the Knicks side that, you know, the Hardens, the Kyries, and the Durants respect on that level. And right now, that's not the case. So they can care less about the Knicks, and that's cool. And I think, you know, vice versa. It's funny having this conversation, like, who runs New York? Like, I didn't realize that was still a thing. Like, we're talking about the King of New York rap like it's 1997.
Shannon, you're doing this the wrong way, man. You got to start hating them. Like, we need this. Everybody, like, you say this now. Let a series get going, right? Let us get maybe a hard foul or two. Don't let the Knicks do nothing like go up 2-1 or something like that.
Don't let us beat them in the series. Oh, my God. Don't let that happen. Like, that's it. Don't let the Knicks beat the Nets in a playoff series. That changes everything. It's all cool right now. And, hey, they're doing a great thing. Let the Knicks beat the Nets in the series. Everything's out the window.
And by the way, it's not out of the realm of possibility because ain't no telling how many Nets are going to be available to play the game.
That's a good point. But my question to you on this as well, Bo, and it's like, you know, you try to as much as you can to live in the moment. And I think, like I said, realistic Knicks fans are able to do that. But of course, you always have those that want to look for bigger and better and down the line. And of course, a lot of those conversations ramped up last week when you had Zion Williamson and his glowing comments about playing in the Garden and all this stuff and looking ahead. And Devin Booker, he's playing in the Garden. Like, all of these names, Kentucky guys. How am I supposed to juggle that? Like, as a Knicks fan, where it's like, you want to appreciate what's going on now, but you always have your eyes on a bigger and better thing.
Go full Knicks fan, baby! Always thinking about what's next. Like, I miss overreacting Knicks fan. Like, the last 20 years have forced y'all to have some measure of perspective on this one. No, go all the way. Because let me tell you, when I saw that post-game with Zion, and he was talking about how much he loved playing in New York, you know the last person I heard sound like that about playing in New York? Bobby Bonilla.
I thought you were going to joke me about LeBron and the Knicks.
No. We all knew he was playing, y'all. That was different. Zion, he's still young and innocent and pure. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was really giving you his heart, like that smile on his face when he talked about it. Now, Bonilla was a little different because Bonilla was local, and he was just talking about coming back and, like, playing in front of his dad and stuff. But that was the last person I recall sounding that happy about the idea of playing in New York. Zion country ass got up here and was like, yo, skyscrapers and everything. I love it. This is great. What? He's like, wow, you mean stuff stays open past 10? Like, he looked like he couldn't believe what was going on. And I mean, he can't get there no time soon, but I don't think it's an exaggeration to look at him and when his time comes and say, no, I think this is a dude that wants to be here. Because look, if he played for the Knicks right now, can you imagine what the excitement level, especially as well as he's playing?
Right, right. Playing at that all-star level too. And I know last week, you know, Woj was on SportsCenter talking about reacting to Zion's comments. And anytime Woj said, like, there's legitimate interest there. Like, anytime Woj said something, then you have to take it for fact. Because Woj ain't just going to be out here willy-nilly saying, you know, the guys have legitimate interest and love playing there, you know? So, yeah, you can put it on the back burner, like, it's something to look forward to down the line. But just knowing naturally, as the Knicks fans, they're always going to look to bring that star in. Like, you know that's inevitable. You know that's coming. The model for the Knicks, we've talked so much about the Nets, is what the Nets did, you know, those years post the Darren Williams run, where they put together, you know, had some guys who played hard and built up enough draft capital and tradable players, assets, that you can then, you know, make a run at a Kyrie, make a run at a Kevin Durant, or eventually make the swing and bring in a Harden. And I think it's going to be hard for the Knicks to ignore that a year or two down the line.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, that's the question, is whether they're going to mess around and get impatient and do something that's going too far. But the Nets, again, they went off and got competent. Like, when you think about the fact that they traded away the picks that ultimately, like, through some maneuvering, but ultimately turned into Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and they're better than the Celtics now. Celtics been playing this whole for the future game for so long, and then you look up, and the team that you fleeced in that trade, you got those unprotected picks for them for old Kevin Garnett and old Paul Pierce, and not only are they better than you, they're way better than you right now. That honestly should get Danny Ainge fired.
Not to mention, too, and Ainge's inability to bring in better players with some of the numerous draft picks that he was able to accumulate over the years. You know, like you just mentioned Tatum and Brown, like he's over there hoarding draft picks. You know, he's like the Oklahoma City Thunder. And, yes. And it's surprising that at a market like Boston, like he wasn't able to turn that into something even better. You know?
Yeah, well, because, I mean, you say a market like Boston, like all I'm saying is they have gotten better at getting free agents. Don't get me wrong, because they used to not be able to get any, but it looks like they got a lemon with Kemba Walker. Not that Kemba Walker can't play, but he got that bum knee, right? And so they got him with the bum knee, and then Al Horford, it was good until, you know, it was time for him to go, and then he wound up going. But, like, ain't nobody going to ask Zion about playing in Boston Garden, and him be like, oh, man, it's the mecca of basketball. You know what I'm saying?
I wasn't saying necessarily like the free agents, but at least using some of those draft picks to try to trade for somebody that you can, you know, bring in for a year or two.
Oh, he's always trying to hit for a home run, man. You're not going to win every trade, like, conclusively. Every now and then, you're going to have to make a deal where maybe the other team got it, maybe they don't, I don't know. But he's trying to, every trade, he's trying to steal from you. That's the only way Danny Ainge knows how to do this, is to try to steal from you. And now, look, they got a bit of a dilemma here because they got the guys. I think they have a good coach. It might be time for him to move on, but it won't be because Brad Stevens is a bad coach. They've got a caliber of star player, and they're bad, man. I mean, not bad. That's going a little bit too far. But like this game, they just lost to Oklahoma City last night, and they basically had four dudes who are allowed to shoot. Nobody else is allowed to shoot at all.
Right. And I will say, and not making it sound like an excuse, and a lot of most teams have dealt with COVID type issues, but I know specifically with the Celtics that they've battled that more than some of the other teams in the league. And Jason Tatum went on the record not too long ago saying that he still has to use an inhaler because of the effects of COVID. Like, it just seems though, it, combined with Kemba's injuries this year, like it just hasn't worked this year. Like something hasn't clicked. Like the Boston Celtics are the Luther Vandross, Jerry Curl of the NBA. Like it ain't. Like, it's there. Like, if you can identify it and say, oh, yeah, that's probably a Jerry Curl, I think. Just, like, it should
don't
be a
turnover.
It should be a championship team, but it ain't quite.
Well, although the other thing, too, with Tatum and Brown is, as good as they are, they ain't that. Which is to say, Jaylen Brown, like, he got 39 against Oklahoma City, for example, right? They can do that for you from time to time. I don't think either of them is ever going to be, like, a top five player in the NBA.
don't think Tatum, with his size, with his height, what, 6'9", 6'10"-ish guard, essentially?
So let's think about this. Players in the NBA right now, right? Where would we put Jason Tatum on that list? Because I can easily name five players better than Jason Tatum right now. And I bet if you ask me to, I might be able to name 10 players better.
Yeah, I was going to say he's probably fringy 10. He's in that 10 to 15 range. I would give him right about there, yeah. But I think because of his age, like, he still has time to get within the next 5 years.
But see, but that's the thing about the Celtics. Once again, we talk about the next 5 years. How we always talk about the next 5 years when it comes to this team. We were talking about 5 years from now, 5 years ago. And now we come back. And they, it's great to be set up for the future, but they ain't never been set up for right now. And that's my thing with Ainge, where it's just like, oh, so this is like, is this like a scam to keep your job? Right? Like the check is always in the mail. Like, oh, no, don't worry. The check's on the way. Just you watch. Oh, yeah, we good right now. But when that check comes.
Real quick, don't cash that to the third. Like, you can save it. You can keep it. I'm going to send it to you. You got it. But just, you know, the fifth, maybe even hold off to the 15th. I'm just saying.
And ask me first.
Just let me know.
Just to be safe. Like, just, I ain't going to lie, man. Doorman in my building, man. I gave him a check for Christmas. He ain't cashed that thing until like the middle of February. And I wanted to come down. He was a young boy. I wanted to come down and lecture him.
You can't be doing that. Oh, no. Oh,
yeah,
no.
Like, hey, man. Like, I mean, I appreciate you assuming that I got it like that. But I'm just telling you right now, as a general rule, like, you bounced out of my account. Hey, first, it's going to be bad for you, too, because they're going to take that 50 back from you.
Well, I remember when I got my first bank account in college with BB&T or whatever. My aunt gave me a check for Christmas or whatever it was. And me being young and stupid, I held off and I didn't cash it right away. And I didn't let her know that I was cashing the check. I went and cashed the check and the check bounced. So not only did it hit her account or whatever in overdraft fees, like BB&T at the time, that thing was, well, we're going to hit you for the overdraft fee as well, even though this ain't your account. And I didn't know, like, this was my first account, so I can identify.
And I'm sure you took that money out as soon as you put it in.
Oh, my God, absolutely. Absolutely. I had a reason to cash it then. Right, yeah. So Danny Ainge is me in college with my BB&T account.
Yeah, man. So no, I want the Knicks to be good. I want to live in this city while the Knicks are good. That's something I want to be able to experience. Since I got here, ain't none of y'all's little teams been good. Like, for real good?
Right,
I've been
right.
Here 4 years. I think the Yankees made the playoffs 1 year or something like that. Knicks ain't been good. The Nets, I mean, they over there, right? But, they, you know, I don't really count. Like, they ain't been good. The Giants and the Jets, they've been booty since I got here. Nobody been good since I got here. If the Knicks do it, because the Knicks are the only team for the whole city.
Right, and that's the thing, too. It's like, it's cool when the Yankees win, of course, 26, 27, 28, how many of they got, you know? It's when eventually if the Mets win again, like, that's great. But nothing hits in New York quite like when the Knicks are good and when the Knicks are winning. You said they are representative of the entire city, the entire region. Like, no disrespect to the Nets, but that's the truth. And, you know, with football, there's division. You know, you have your Giants fans, your Jets fans, Yankees fans, your Mets fans, your Islanders, your Rangers fans. But when the Knicks are hitting and the Knicks are good, that brings all New Yorkers together.
Go, New York. Go, New York. Go.
Hit the damn music, right?
Y'all, like I say, I want it. I really want it bad. And then I want it to, like, not quite get there. Like, y'all are close, but y'all got to fight it so that it can all come out of y'all. Like, I want the full experience. I want to enjoy this. I want to appreciate this.
Someone who takes great pride in being able to jump the Knicks, which they deserve, you know, like, I'm curious to see how the media overall handles this now that they are respectable, at least going in that path where it's been so easy to joke the calamity that have been the Knicks, the things that happened with Oakley and Isaiah Thomas, what happened there and Marbury and the different things that, you know, make the Knicks, you know, a laughingstock, which they very much earn. But now, how do we treat this if they are respectable and you don't get headlines? You know?
Well, what I've come to appreciate about Knicks fans through time, as I've come to dislike the dork fan of the NBA that is into the trades and the asset stacking and everything else and doesn't seem to, like, actually enjoy basketball. Knicks fans, one, really enjoy basketball. Like, they're in it for the activity of basketball, the theater of basketball, all of this stuff. Like, Knicks fans really appreciate that. And I have come to appreciate that you guys really have no reason to love this team in the ways that you love this team, but you do still love them. Like the affection that Knicks fans have for the Knicks. And as much as it can be like, okay, you overestimating how good the team is, what it really is a lot of times is that first glimmer of hope. You're like, I don't know. I can see it. Like, Knicks fans are quietly the most, like, healthily optimistic fan base that there is.
Right. But then on the flip side, and I'll admit it, you do have those jerk Knicks fans that are out there as well. You had them on Twitter during this 9-game winning streak. You had the ones that are, you know, chest out and, oh, we doing this.
Yes, I love them too, because when it goes bad, I can now focus on them. Like, I've come to realize that they're not everybody now that I got more exposure to them. But yeah, no, they out there. It is going. I'm telling you, I just can't wait. If they win a playoff series, the internet's going to be going nuts.
They make us look bad, because I know there was footage of the Knicks at the Garden after they beat the Raptors, and there was a group of Knicks fans harassing a Raptors fan in a Raptor jersey. Like, dude, like, you're not reflective of us. You don't represent us. Let's get away from that. But I just fear that too much of the focus will be on those types instead of the sound-minded ones who have been hurt so many times and for some reason are still.
Shit ain't no fun in sound mind, baby. Ain't no fun in sound mind. Like, you out here trying to gentrify Knicks fans. That is not happening. Nah. Keep it gully.
That's a really good way to put that. I'm going to steal that. Let me write that down right now.
Nah. Keep it gully. Like, I want good things for you because I want you guys to be happy, because I feel like even if they lose a playoff series this year, nah. This is the beginning. Next year, that's when we going to have some expectations. I don't know what they plan for the front office to do, but people going to be starting looking for some levels of improvement and the likes. Next year is when it's going to start getting fun, seeing how y'all get down.
Right. I would say definitely the next 2 years. I think you have to look at it as the totality of this season and the next two. And that's when we'll have a full, clear idea of what this Thibodeau, Leon Rose, Knicks rebuild is.
See, that's what I worry about for y'all is free agency, because that never goes the way you guys want it to. That's what worries me about it is, because I do think, again, if competent, you can get some guys, and I think they're competent.
Right. And I know we'll transition here soon, but you even look at the Emmanuel Quickly selection, you know, the Obi Toppin, like, he was a named guy, still hasn't worked out, still trying to find his way. Like, we get that, probably drafted a little too high, but been able to trade back into the first round and get a guy like Quickly, who looks like he's built for playing in that situation. Like, that's an example right there that gives me hope and optimism.
Get excited, Shannon.
From Kentucky, because the Knicks are the Kentucky Wildcats of the of New York. And that gives me hope and optimism. You see him starting to glow here early in the morning.
Get excited. That's what I'm saying. Let it take you over. Get excited. I know you don't want to entertain us in that way, but get excited, baby.
We're coming.
You find it.
You try to pull it out of me right now. I'm not gonna let it happen.
It's a pandemic. We need something to bring us joy. The Knicks are bringing you joy. Let the joy out.
Check with me after this 6-game road swing, and then we'll see.
Okay. I'm just saying, if they go 4-2 on the road, baby, I'm just saying, get excited.
Check with me after these 6 games and make sure they're not in the play-in.
Go crazy. Now, speaking of going crazy, but not really crazy, you hit me up about this, and I didn't realize it till you said it. So the Twitter's out here talking about Babe Ruth being black.
Like, I know I saw this a couple years back when it was speculation about this, but apparently, like, the internet was going nuts about this yesterday, and that there was, like, real speculation about Babe Ruth's heritage. Now, I know, like, his parents are of German descent or whatever, but there's still folks that look at his features and his characteristics and speculate whether or not Babe Ruth was black. And then I went and looked too, and I didn't realize this, that during his playing days, like, he joked about his wide nose and his full lips and being, you know, referred to as N-word and he hung out in Harlem. He was friends with Mr. Bojangles. Like, he was legit down with black folks and hanging in Harlem when Harlem was the Harlem that we talk about in the Renaissance and Major League Baseball, and folks weren't too keen with that.
Yeah. Ty Cobb, that was his thing. Ty Cobb did not like that whole style of baseball. Like, Ty Cobb did not like home run baseball. But nah, he was vehement that he believed that Babe Ruth was an Afro-American of sorts. And the thing that people need to realize, especially you youngsters, who got called black was a little different back then than it is right now. And I can show you some pictures of people who we called black at the time. And Babe Ruth kind of fits in that category of things. Like, my man Miro always jokes, he says Babe Ruth is Dominican. And I'm like, Miro, you know what we call Dominican in the United States? Black. Like, outside of New York, we do not call Dominican Dominican. They are black also. Yes, Babe Ruth. It's been a thing. It's a long-standing thing. I know that people are just hearing this for the first time of the possibility of Babe Ruth being black. And man, can you imagine what it would have been like back in the day if they had ever definitively concluded that Babe Ruth was black?
Think about that. Like the most, you know, Herculean, iconic sports figure in American history. And to find out that that person was part black, like that changes everything.
Well, hold on, hold on. Keep in mind, especially back then, wasn't no part black. Part black.
One drop.
Especially then, wasn't no half black. Nah, you was just black. What would they have done? Would they have like taken him to jail for fraud? Would they, or would the decision just be made, we gonna ride this out and he ain't black? Because that would have torn down everything white folks of the day believed. If not just the greatest baseball player ever, like Babe Ruth was number one and it didn't even matter who was number two. He was so much better than everybody else. If they would have found out that he was black, would they have showed up at his crib?
Like, that's legit. Like, we say that in jest, but like, that's legit. Especially we're talking about playing back then in the 20s and the 30s. That would have changed everything. Like, you wonder if that was, in fact, the case. We wouldn't have been talking about Babe Ruth the way we still do now, you know, 100 years later. It's amazing to even think, to even have that idea.
We would be talking about Babe Ruth, who, by the way, in his career, stole home a bunch of times. He was not as slow as people think. Man, that size, that quick, just, you know, you want to line it up with the stereotypes. But anyway,
Babe Ruth was Ricky Henderson before Ricky Henderson.
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. He was Barry Bonds, right? He could have been a 30 for 30 man under different circumstances. If they found out that he was black, that would have been involved a meeting that started with the phrase, nothing that's said in this room leaves this room.
Absolutely.
Right? And you're like, how will we talk about Babe Ruth right now? Here's how we would talk about Babe Ruth. Man, y'all don't even know. There was a black dude that was the best player in baseball. And then one day, not only was he not playing no more, they took all his stuff out the record books.
Right. Like he would have really been a legend then.
Yeah. It'd have been like either you saw it or you didn't. And like for some reason, all the box scores now only have 8 people in the lineup. Like we no longer have any records of what it was that he provided.
Like the Yankees Murderers Row. They got a ghost runner on second. Who knew? It's even real.
Yeah, that's it. Get Babe Ruth, that would become his new nickname would be the Ghost Man. Like I was glad to find out. I didn't know if everybody played with the Ghost Man. As I got older and realized, okay, because like, for people who don't know about the Ghost Man, it takes a lot of people to play baseball. And by more people than you actually have. So sometimes you get out there, you play, all right, Ghost Man on second. Now, the best would be trying to argue about whether or not the Ghost Man would be able to go from like first to third on a single.
Right. Or if he's on second, but you got to get a double to bring. If he's on second, you got to hit at least a double in order for Ghost Man to make it home. Like if you hit a single, he's only advancing to third, right?
Right. What if it was hit and run with the Ghost Man, right? Like, can you say that I had run a hit and run with the Ghost Man? Yeah, Babe Ruth would have been that. He would have been the Ghost Man. There would have been a book about the Ghost Man who played, but nobody really remembers it. They'd be trying to interview the white folks at the time about it. Like, yeah, I kind of remember number three, but I don't. Nah.
Right. Like, it's fascinating to think that we could have an Imitation of Life baseball edition with Babe Ruth and nobody knew. Like, that's just amazing. We would have Mahalia Jackson singing. It would have been a whole thing.
Well, imagine if after Jackie Robinson came out and somebody did an interview with Babe Ruth and they were like, so what do you think about the first black player in the major leagues? Second. Just left it at that. Second.
And I was reading, too, but according to Babe Ruth's daughter, he wanted to be a manager.
Yeah.
And he wanted to bring on black players, but Major League Baseball was against that. And this was pre-Jackie Robinson. Like,
just
that's
saying.
Like, Babe looking at it like, yo, I want to feel the best nine at all times. And if that best nine needs to look like me, I mean, the best nine.
That's what I was about to say. That's what I'm saying. Like, I do feel like we can put a lot of things together if we want to, and we get to, it sounds like Babe Ruth was a brother.
We shall see. Like, you know, ultimately, I know they'll shoot it down, like, in all of this stuff. But to at least in 2021, and we're still having this conversation, it's just totally fascinating to me. It changes everything. I love it.
And we need to start going back and looking at some other pictures of the athletic greats of the day and just start adopting some of them as being black. Because, look, black is an arbitrary notion. We could just call them black. Ain't nothing insulting about saying that they black. What if Ty Cobb was so concerned about that? Because, you know, in his own, he actually, you know what I'm saying? Got a little something back there. What if that happened to be the case?
Right.
He did have 890 stolen bases.
he was a sneaky athletic too. Like, yeah. He was legit athletic. Like,
yeah, like, what if we found out that George Mikan actually was an African American, the dream shake of his day? You know what I'm saying?
What if Johnny Unitas, who knew? Like, he was on this flat top thing before everybody. Like, who knew? The black
sneakers, even, like, what about later in the day? The first black quarterback to win the Heisman Trophy, Vinny Testaverde.
The homie.
Man, that could have gone either. Hey, he played for Miami, right? He was in the camouflage. Like
they throw around the olive skin, but I'm just saying.
That's what I'm saying. Olive skin. Look, if I told you Vinny Testaverde and Derek Jeter were brothers, it's plausible. And by the way, I'm told it's still like old white dudes up here who be trying to act like Derek Jeter is not all team Afro.
Really? Still?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Because
if you want to convince yourself otherwise, you can.
And that's the thing. And maybe because I've never stepped back and I looked at it like that. Like, for me, like yeah, it's biracial. But for me, like, Derek Jeter was always black. Like, just,
well, yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm seeing, like, I didn't even, for me, that didn't even, like, that notion of, like, I didn't even come up because he wasn't trying to pass, you know?
Right. Because that's because you don't need to convince yourself that you could love somebody that much and him also be black. Like, for the folks who just can't wrap their minds around, like, it's, you talking about the Howard Bryant, it's your man Pino and Do the Right Thing, mm-hmm. right? Who's your favorite basketball player? Right. Who's your favorite actor? Right. Who's your, you know, who's your favorite musician? Okay, right? And there's somebody that's been there with Derek Jeter, and they were just like, you know what? If I like him this much, then he must not be black.
Right.
Problem solved. I'm going out of Bensonhurst. Ain't one of them places. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I tell you right now, I've been to Bensonhurst maybe one time in my life. I'm just saying, like, I'm sorry.
But hopefully you didn't pick that one day.
No. Like, Like, maybe that at one time, but that, like, we knew, like, it was one of those unwritten rules, and I don't know if that's still the case now in Brooklyn. Like, as many cultures that you have, it's still very much segregated. Like, it's the most amazing thing about New York. Like, everybody's there, but everybody, it's very well identified and marked, at least at that time, that this is where we are, this is where you guys are. We'll roll in this space, and we're good. We have everything we need here. No need to go there.
Well, this is what's interesting about that to me, is that there are neighborhoods that, as a black person, you might not go to because it was just generally hazardous that now you will go to, like Fort Greene, for example. Like, Fort Greene done turned into something else. You might not have gone to Fort Greene before because it's a little rough and tumble, but now they got a lot of nice restaurants and stuff. It's still enough black people. You'll go down there. But the places that were dangerous for black people because of the non-black people, it's about what it was before. Like, I ain't heard nobody be like, yeah, now I'm going down to Bensonhurst. No. Same people that didn't want you there before do not want you there now. Staten Island, nah, ain't nothing changed.
It may be free to go on the ferry, but nah, I'm good. That's what I mean right here. I'm good.
So I have tried to think of, like, my brother said he knew somebody once that part of how they decided to see the city or learn the city was they rode every subway line. Like, they would just take a day and pick a subway line and ride it from end to end.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was an interesting way, you know, to go about doing this. That Staten Island portion of the trip, I have not come up with a compelling reason to go to Staten Island yet. Like, I'm trying to think of what somebody would have to hit me up with and be like, yeah, man, we going down to Staten Island for that.
Like, no one has ever just casually said, yo, we about to head to Staten Island. No one ever at any point in time. I'm sorry.
I've never heard, like, yo, it's this restaurant you got to go check out in Staten Island. Never heard that. I've heard that in the Bronx. I have not heard that it's that knowledge.
Like, honestly, like, I hadn't, prior to Wu-Tang Clan, I hadn't thought 1 minute about Staten Island. Honestly, like, we go through the five boroughs and they make, and it's always the last one that's brought up. But prior to Wu-Tang, I had no reason to think about Staten Island.
They're the only, like, I'm trying to think of any black person I've met or, like, heard of who just was from Staten Island other than the Wu.
Like, and I think that probably for them added to the intrigue of what they were, aside from, you know, the kung fu and all of that stuff, was the fact that, yo, we got a group of these black dudes, some from Brooklyn, but most from Staten Island, and we don't know nothing about Staten Island. They got black folks in Staten Island. That was my first thing when Wu-Tang came out.
Yo, but then that also means, like, does anybody actually know them? You know what I'm saying? Because, like, New York, like, all these cats in New York, they know their little area. Like, I always talk about Nas. Part of the big deal with Nas is hard to explain is that Nas is in Queensbridge, which is the largest housing project in North America. So there's a lot of people who know of him, but it was almost like people were taking trips to the Oracle to go hear about him because they just heard that there was this kid in Queensbridge who was killing it, right? But it's a lot easier to get to Queensbridge than it is to get to Staten Island, right? Like, wasn't nobody down there hanging out with them? And then when they show up, maybe you got some kinfolk in some of these places, but you ain't from none of these places.
And that added to the lore because, like, yeah, I see the bridge, and that's a pretty long, you know, bridge, but I have no reason to go to that bridge. Only time you go to Staten Island is if you're intentional about going to Staten Island, and I never did. So it's interesting to find out that a lot of that still hasn't changed in 2021. That's amazing to me.
Before we let you go here, don't you think the Giants should draft a quarterback? Like, you thought I was going to let you get out of here without talking about the sorry Giants. Incorrect. Shouldn't they be looking at a quarterback?
Look, the Giants are, we got a luxury now. We might be even taking a position player in the draft, looking at a wideout. We went out and spent money on receivers and still may take another one. And for me, honestly, it's going to be hard if Justin Fields is still there and the Giants pass, which they will. But it's going to be hard as a Giant fan to see a talent like that and figure, nah, we're good. We'll ride with Daniel Jones.
Yo, when's the last time the Giants were just sorry for this long?
Ooh. Oh, I would say probably the post-LT days of the Giants of the mid-2000s. Like Rodney Hampton was good, don't get me wrong, but like those teams weren't making the playoffs and they weren't winning playoffs. Meanwhile, you had the run of the Cowboys in that dynasty in the 90s, and the Giants were just sorry throughout that until they made the one Super Bowl run in the late 90s.
Yeah, but like I have not seen a lick of good football from this city since I got here. And they both be on the regular TV all the time.
We say joking with Jones, but this is a make it or break it year for him.
Oh, yeah.
The excuses of not having weapons and all this stuff. Like, you're going to have weapons. In theory, the offensive line should be better. The hope is that Saquon will stay healthy this year. Like, this is it. Like, this is a make or break year, not only for Daniel Jones, but Dave Gettleman as well, because the whole Dave Gettleman tenure rides on the success of Daniel Jones. And so this year right here will tell you a lot about what the Giants will be coming up. Because if you don't make it this year, then it's a wrap.
How you feel about Judge Joe Brown, y'all's coach?
Initially, because I ain't no dude. And he had some of this college, you know, mentality stuff. He was growing on me. Like, I still need to see a little bit more. But I think as he continues to grow and come into his own and not try to be a Belichick, the Patriot way type stuff, and get more of his own identity, I think it can work, but the jury's still out. But I will say this, like the defense overperformed last year and they just didn't have the weapons. So I don't think they're going to contend for a Super Bowl, but in theory, they should make the playoffs this year. For Daniel Jones' sake, they better.
Oh, look at that. The optimism is for your Giants. They're going to be the ones to break your heart.
They better. Like, that's all. No, it can be one or two things. They either make the playoffs or it's time to move on for Daniel Jones. Either way, it's a win for me. Like, this is a win-win, baby.
Oh, no, the playoffs then becomes a lose because you still need to move on for Daniel Jones, and that'll trick him into thinking that they should.
Probably. And that's probably realistically what's going to happen.
Yeah, man. That is my man, Shannon Penn. Check him out, 4 to 7 Eastern. Chiney and Golic on ESPN Radio. Thank you, man.
You got me up and early here today. This is something. But no, I will say, too, like, and congratulations to you and the continued success of the Right Time with Blondie Jones podcast. You and Gabe do a tremendous job. I know you guys are 3 days a week now. Love the Fridays with Dominique Foxworth. It's a must listen. So obviously you guys are listening now, so you already know that. But I appreciate you guys having me on.
I couldn't be here without you, man. Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing 3 times a week. Gabe Bassan and Tony Colletti, you'd handle all the things behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.